welcome to the Noontime Public Affairs here with Rick and Adam answering your computer questions on this Noontime KFM 88.1 FM Public Affairs show on the third Wednesday. I'm trying to remember what we are doing here. Our phone number is 241-8801 extension 1. I did not get a chance to put up our page on the blog at helpmerick.com, so I hope that people out there listening spread the news far and wide that we are here to answer your technology questions. 241-8801. You're listening to KFM Radio, Grand Junction, Colorado, 88.1 FM. Oh. And we're going to do the noontime calendar. And so, Adam, cue the calendar. Welcome back to the Noontime Public Affairs. My name's Rick Castellini.
And I'm Adam Cochran.
And our phone number again, 241-8801, extension 1. And this, again, is you're listening to KFM. I think I've said that 1,000 times, so we'll let that go.
KFM now. Grand Junction,
Colorado. 88.1 FM.
There you go.
I think we've got it covered.
Okay, good.
For the next day and a half.
And so, I hope we did it legal. I've done some illegal IDs before, so
what would an illegal ID be?
I have no idea. I suppose an ID that's not the legal ID. I don't know.
Well, but I need an example.
I have no idea. I was just joking.
I am currently cruising the web or attempting to cruise the web, and it seems to be working, Adam.
Good.
Pretty snappy
okay,
right now.
It must have been something that I
on Adam's Sprint Galaxy S, he's rooted it, which is a very geeky kind of thing to do, but they're making it easier.
Oh, man.
On his to share his internet off his phone to my laptop.
Yep.
So that's kind of fun.
It's basically hook the phone up, turn a little thing on inside the phone that basically says allow you to play with it, and then run a little file, and then it says done.
And you can share the internet.
That's it. Then you can share the internet.
You ought to let Sam use the iPad while we're in this season. Are you bored,
there you
Sam?
Go. You bored, Sam?
No. He says
my brother bored. Sam is in with us today, so he doesn't want to talk. So that's okay.
241-8801, extension 1 is a phone number. Speaking of geeky, I don't know if you saw my tweet from Sunday, but I built an Android app.
Oh, I did see that.
Yeah.
Was it fun?
Very cool.
I haven't tried it yet. Did you make a Help Me Rick Android app?
No. What I did was I made an app that would either text or call a specific person.
Uh-huh.
So what I did is I put a phone. I got a graphic, put a phone in the background. And then I made a button for the text and a button for the call.
Okay.
And the text just said, call me now. And that's all. And you just push the button and it automatically does that.
Yeah.
Sends a text without you doing anything else.
That's cool.
And then if you need to call that person, you just call and it calls them.
It was
very simple.
There you
but,
go.
And I did it while I was watching the football game and it was kind of fun.
Wow.
And, I think I might try to do another one.
Yeah,
because it was that much
fun
to do.
Make a Help Me Rick one.
Yeah.
We need a Help Me Rick Android app.
That'd be kind of fun. We have to figure out what we want
just,
on it.
Oh, I'd just basically show the RSS feed and alert you when new shows were on and stuff like that.
I'd have to figure that out. But it was neat. It was actually, I have to say that the help screens on the Android site aren't real good. And so I had to do more searching in the forum.
Yeah.
But if I did not take the time to go through all the tutorials, because they actually have you go through 4 or 5 tutorials building apps.
Right.
If you want to. But I did it on the little MacBook.
Yeah.
And it's very, very cool.
Now, was
it's all web-based.
That's what I was going to say. Is there any coding involved at all, or is it mostly just drag and drop?
Zero coding.
Wow, that's very
cool.
So
it's the one thing that's kind of a little bit different, and I don't remember the name of it off the top of the bat here, but there was something in there called the a module section kind of thing.
Yes.
Well, once you kind of graphically built your app, you had to switch to another screen and they had like little puzzle pieces.
Oh, okay.
And you had to put the puzzle pieces together the way you intended them to be. But that was the extent of programming.
Interesting.
But no coding language or anything else. I'm sure there's a way to find all that. But it took me a while to figure. I still didn't get my buttons centered on the screen. I haven't figured that out yet. So the buttons are in the left-hand side.
Hmm.
And I tried to use tables, but I don't know if I did my puzzle right in the tables so you could center graphics and center buttons and stuff.
Wow.
But very cool. Very neat.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
And
I'll have to try that.
Certainly a lot easier. I was going to try to do iPhone apps just to kind of play with it, but to go through there, you have to go through a submittal process, and then they accept you, and then you got to download a huge thing. And plus, you have to have an Apple to do it.
Right.
You can't develop an iPhone app on Windows.
Right.
And so I didn't have an Apple at the time, so you have to have the SDK and all that kind of stuff. But with the Google, you just In fact, the way I got into it, there was a stumble that I came across where you'll appreciate this. Somebody made an app for his girlfriend that was a Star Wars app, and basically it was a proposal to her. And at the end, if she clicked yes, it said that, you know, the Death Star was destroyed and, you know, something good happened. And then if she said no, it had something else. And then she could try again or say no way or whatever. But at the very bottom, there was a link to the Google Apps creation. And so I just followed it on a whim. And
cool.
In a few minutes, I was building an app. Probably took me about an hour to do just that simple app. I'm looking at help. And then I put my graphic in and it would show up on the what you see is what you get. But it took me a while to search to know that you can't have a background color if you also have a background
image. Right.
So I had to set background color to none.
Right.
And so it was pretty interesting.
Cool.
It was a lot of fun.
And that's the fun you get into with an Android.
So there's a couple geeky things right off the top.
Well, that was really geeky.
Rooting and building apps.
Wow. And by the way, we do answer basic email, basic computer.
Yeah, don't ask us programming apps.
Yeah,
programming questions.
We just talk about that because we're impressed with ourselves that we actually do something like that. But in reality, we prefer to answer your printer questions and your email questions and your cell phone questions, your digital camera questions, any of those things. We're happy to do that. You can call us here at the station at 970-241-8801, extension 1.
There you got it.
That's
you
it.
Got them all.
That's it. I've just heard you say it so many times, and I haven't. What's that called? Audiophonic memory.
Oh,
that
good.
Remembers the things you hear.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I have that.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm looking. One news item that came up this week. We talked last week on our podcast about Verizon coming out with the iPhone.
Yes.
And have you seen Consumer Reports?
I have not.
Consumer Reports. They're just trying to be relevant, and they're in a totally, in my opinion, an irrelevant
thing. I completely agree with that.
And then for all you people out there that are Consumer Report aficionados,
we'll
apologize, but I don't apologize.
Sure. Yeah.
But I'll tell you what the Consumer Report said about the Verizon iPhone here in a few minutes.
Okay. Here, let's go ahead and answer a call. Hello, you're on the Public Affairs Show talking about technology with Rick and Adam. What can we do for you?
Yes. Hi, guys. I've got an iPhone 3G.
Okay.
My son gave it to me maybe a year and a half ago. And it's unlocked. It's working on T-Mobile.
Good.
And I've noticed there are several new updates, but I haven't downloaded any from the Apple website. I know you shouldn't do that, otherwise it'll mess it up. What can I do to bring it up to a higher level of OS so I can get some more of their apps?
Well, you can continue to do the updates. You'll just have to go through the unlock process again.
Oh.
So, and it's not a big deal. In fact, I thought it was a much bigger deal than it was going to be. And they also have when you sync your phone with iTunes. They do have it always backs up your existing setup as it is. So you can always restore if you have a problem. But the big thing is if you do the update and it breaks the unlocking that was done so that you could use T-Mobile, all you do is go back and, like, let's say you're using 3.3 or whatever the operating system is on that system currently, and you would like to update to a newer version. I would not recommend, you said yours is 3G or 3GS?
It's a 3G.
Okay, I would not go to the 4.0 because the 4.0 operating system really is made for the little faster hardware that started with 3GS. And it works on the 3G, but it really does. You do see a big performance hit. So as long as you have the newest version of the 3 software, I think I would have to stay with that on the 3G.
Now, when my son gave this to me, he put on an app to Cydia. Are you familiar with that?
So that means not only are you opened up or unlocked, but you're also what's called jailbroke. And so jailbroke means that you really aren't using the iPhone system anymore. You're using a system on top of the iPhone system called, I think it's called Cydia. Or Cydia, I guess, is the name of their app store.
Now, the one I would kind of give you a little bit of a precaution here, because a lot of the stuff that you would use, a lot of the apps that require that you have a newer operating system on that phone, a lot of times they won't even work on the 3G. They only work on the 3GS and higher. So you may not gain a lot by doing those updates anyway. So I would kind of weigh the costs and benefits there and see if it's really worth doing that update. Do a little bit of research before you jump into it, because you could find yourself in a little bit of a tangled mess there that you don't want to get into, and then find out that even if it was going to work,
it's not that much of an advantage.
It wouldn't be an advantage anyway. So some of the things like GPS and camera and video camera and stuff like that, you can't even make the 3G do, even if you were to update the operating system.
Gotcha. Okay. Hey, thanks for your advice.
You bet.
You're welcome. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Yeah, when you jailbreak, which basically means you're deciding to go off the Apple train and you're going to go your own route, you get a lot of possibilities, including what Adam did today, which is tether your phone to a laptop and allow yourself to become a hotspot and things like that. But you do give up the ability to do some of those other standard updates.
And generally, if you do it, it voids the warranty on the phone. That's not that big a deal, because most jailbreaks and most roots and stuff like that, you can reverse and undo. So it's not as big a deal as what it sounds like.
Just don't tell Apple you did it.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too is, if you're paying your phone insurance, that does cover jailbroken phones.
Oh, it does.
So at least on Sprint. So if I was to take it back in and, you know, because I broke it or because something wore out on it, they would still replace it.
I did see a news story, speaking of Sprint, that they're upping their data plans.
Yeah. You're grandfathered in. So basically, if you have a Sprint phone and it's a smartphone, if you upgrade that phone at any time, it's going to cost you an additional $10 now because of the amount of data.
But it's not for the current customers.
No. Okay. Current customers don't have to pay that
until
their contract is up.
Renews, yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
And so that's what they're in. But Sprint has some big announcements on the way, and so I almost bet they're going to lower their voice plans.
Mm-hmm.
They
still have very affordable rates when you do the all-in-ones.
Yes. But definitely, I mean, if you weigh it out, if you compare it, Sprint and T-Mobile are kind of neck and neck.
Mm-hmm.
But those two are the two lowest priced plans out there
for smartphones.
And in the United States, in general, I think that Sprint's coverage is right on par with Verizon's, because they have contracts that allow them to cross over and use each other's towers and stuff like that. So
that's cool.
It's pretty good stuff.
Very good. Well, the reason that we were talking about Consumer Reports, and by the way, if you want to make a phone call, 241-8801 extension 1. We talk a lot lately, because that's where everything's really moving and shaking, is mobile devices and iPads and those kind of things and phones. But if you have a question about anything, even if you're still using a computer, and Adam's actually clicking on a computer, and so am I at the moment, so we still answer questions about computers as well. So give us a call, 241-8801, extension 1. But I was talking about Consumer Reports. The latest in the last couple of days is that Consumer Reports is saying, don't buy the initial Verizon iPhone 4.
Mm-hmm.
Wait till the summer and get the 5. They're saying it's already an old phone.
Yep.
And don't do it.
Yeah. I can see that. I think that's a valid argument in some cases. But again, I think if the price is right and you're needing to jump in, go ahead and do it. It's not, I mean, the nice thing about the iPhone 4 is that it's a year old, and they've kind of perfected, you know, they've gone through and fixed a lot of the glitches, the antenna stuff. I don't know if you saw, but the antenna is a little bit different on the Verizon version.
I have not seen that.
It's just little things most people wouldn't notice, but the buttons are in a slightly different place, a few millimeters off, because the antenna has been changed and stuff like that.
Wow.
So some of the
cases will have to be changed
for
the Verizon.
Yeah, Verizon will probably carry its own
cases. I bet those case makers love that, because they have to come up with new dyes.
Yeah, new dyes that move it like a millimeter, 4 millimeters or something.
Oh,
yeah,
cruel.
Exactly. But anyway, it is interesting, and I wouldn't necessarily say avoid it, but I would say don't go out and ruin your contract and all of that just to get it. I would wait till you have the time to, you know, your contract's up or something like that.
Well, and speaking of mobile, the other news item that came up today, and I think we're going to start seeing this roll out over the next few years, Starbucks announced that starting this year, all of their stores, and I don't see an actual start date as I'm scanning here, but all of their stores are going to be able to accept mobile payment. So if you have a mobile phone, a smartphone, you can make your payment through your phone instead of having to pull out cash or a credit card.
Weird.
So
like through text or
no, it's, I just, how it's, does that work? They'll, like have a, they'll have a preloaded Starbucks card slash application.
Okay.
So it's not quite like in Europe where it'll charge it to your phone.
Right.
Where apparently you can walk up to a vending machine and hold your phone up to it.
Yeah.
I guess, is that Japan or Europe?
It's probably both, actually.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's both. But
and we have
especially
the,
in Asia,
the quick pay at some of the gas stations around town where you just you can wave your wallet if you have a special little magnetic
key. Yeah, I think they're kind of fading those out, though. I haven't seen a lot of those.
I think the smartphone thing will probably take it over.
Yeah. I think RFID stuff was a little too scary that it made it too possible for some hacker with a wand to come up to
your
wallet.
What's RFID? You're throwing in acronyms.
That would be radio frequency identification, I think, is what it stands for.
I think you're right.
But it's a little chip on, they were putting on certain cards and things like that to where you could actually just hold your wallet up to this little receiver on the counter.
Weren't the new passports also have an RFID?
Yeah.
Do they still, or did
now,
they
see,
mix
I don't
it?
I don't know because, see, I haven't been keeping up on the technology, but I do know that it's not that hard for a hacker to make an RFID wand that charges your credit card.
They could just walk by you and,
exactly,
and pick up the data or something like that.
No, I know there's, they're trying to say that's not the case and it's not that easy, but hackers say,
Well, what other news items poked out to you this week?
Well, I've been looking at, I've been watching the Steve Jobs controversy.
Now, why
not controversy, but you know, Steve Jobs is going to take some time off again for his health. Did you see that?
Yes.
Looks
yeah.
So that's a big,
with no end date this time. So,
right,
you know, bless his heart. I know he's been very ill and, it's very interesting that there's what's kind of like Bill Gates with Microsoft. I mean, that was when he left Microsoft, that was kind of the same, not quite, I don't
not
think the fever
the
it
same,
is.
Not quite the same though. Yeah.
But, he is so tied in with what Apple does and,
yeah,
and the way people perceive Apple.
Yep.
And it's kind of interesting.
Yeah. His stubbornness.
I do hope he can kick whatever he's got going and come back
too,
full strength. He's a young man. He's only in his 50s, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe 60 at the most.
Yeah.
All right, 241-8801. Welcome to the Rick and Adam Show here on KFM. What can we help you with?
Hi. I just would like to ask, at one time, Google offered a free telephone information service.
Yep.
It was 411. It could be dialed from the
cell.
That was just for their use only, actually. It turns out, because they don't, it's no longer available. And they what they did that for, and I was talking to a client this morning about it. I put the Google app on their smartphone. What they did it for was for their own data collection for 2 or 3 years. When you called into that phone number and talked to their computers, basically they were perfecting their voice recognition. And once they got enough data and they felt like their machines were recognizing people's voices and different accents and things like that, they pulled the service.
Wow.
Is but if you
another,
have if you have
another service that's offered by another company, I mean preferably free, that that could be used dialing from the cell phone?
Not voice operated that I know of. You can do it with text messaging through Google, you can still do that. But unfortunately there is nothing that I know of voice wise. Adam, I think, is looking.
Well, I'm looking right now, I'm saying, are there any alternatives to Google 411? And that's all I did is type that into Google. Or Google 411 alternatives. There's a couple articles here, but my computer is slow and loading. But Lifehacker has an article on it, so that might be a good option. Now, you don't have a cell phone at all?
She does.
Oh, you do have a cell phone. There's a couple options. Well, here. According to this, the best equivalent is very similar, is Bing 411. 1-800-BING-411, which
really
is offered by Microsoft.
Oh, hey, great. Okay.
So you might try that. And that the one thing about that is, it says that that's probably the best alternative. The other thing is there's another one that's a text equivalent. Now, if you have text messaging on your phone, this is the one I would use. You can just text Google, which is 466-453, and then you can put something like
Movies and
movies,
Grand Junction.
Grand Junction, or Movies 81501.
Or phone number for Haining Plumbing.
Yeah, you can put that in there, and it will send you a text back with that information. So,
but it looks like this 1-800 Bing, Microsoft does it again. They copy somebody else's idea and use it. So that might be the one to try. 1-800-BING-411, which is 246-4411.
There's another one that's 1-800-FREE-411. So there are some alternatives, and all I did was went to Google and typed in Goog 411 alternatives.
Okay, great. That's a great service. I appreciate the information.
No
Thank
problem.
You.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I really liked Goog 411, and I used it fairly often, but once I got a smartphone that had some apps,
right,
I didn't use it near as much, and especially with an Android phone because it's kind of built into the phone. With Android, I can just say Movie Theater Grand Junction and search, and it finds
it. Well, but because with the Android, you're using what they put in
right.
the Goog 411 for.
Right.
They did that to build that voice app. The interesting thing is I think it's very expensive to maintain that kind of system, and that's one reason they nixed it. But I am surprised that they nixed it so quickly.
Yeah, me too.
But I did not know until you found that out there that Bing 411 does the same thing.
I didn't know that either. So I'm glad she asked that question. Now
yeah,
we know.
Now we know. Very cool. All right, 241-8801 extension 1. You're listening to Rick and Adam here on the Noontime Public Affairs. I think we've gotten all of our announcements out of the way, right, Adam? We just had to
as far
do the calendar.
As I know.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Anything else news-wise come up for you this week?
Oh, I don't know. I'm looking, and really, we just did a show fairly recently, so I'm trying to catch up on anything that's new since then. But no.
There is the one thing that I don't know if we talked about during our evening show last week, but there has been, maybe we did, but it's worth mentioning again. I've already had two people in the past few weeks that have had people call them from tech support companies. They're just random phone calls.
Right.
And the phone call says, goes something like this.
We need to do air quotes when we say tech support companies.
Yeah, definitely. Adam is holding up the air quotes.
There you go.
And basically they're telling you when you're on the phone that you have viruses on your computer. And so the first thing that should come to your mind is, how do they know I have a computer? Because you may or may not have one. But they're just going on the... They're going on the statistics that in the United States anyway, more than 80% of households have at least one computer. And so that's what they're banking on. Well, once they do that and they get you shook up enough, then they ask you to go to your computer and go to a particular website that then gives them access to your computer. And then they show you a scary little graphic that shows that you have 4,000 or 5,000 or 6,000 problems on your computer. And then for $159, anywhere from $129 to $159, they can correct it for you. And basically, it is a scam. If it sounds like a scam to you, congratulations, it is a scam. So do not, or be wary, do not answer these questions from these people. Just say thank you and hang up from them. They don't know that you have a computer. They don't know anything about you except your phone number unless you start giving them information like your credit card, like access to your computer, and that kind of thing. So just bypass that. That's a security tip of the week, is do not believe those random phone calls that you get telling you have problems.
Or I'm going to add to that and say, do not believe the television commercials that tell you to
speed up my PC,
speed up your computer,
quadruple your speed.
Yeah, all of those things. Even though there's people with testimonials on those commercials.
And they're so convincing.
They sure are. Well, they're convincing to somebody because there's commercials still air from time to time. And
when the commercials come on, just go to your kitchen and get a glass of water.
Yeah.
It's a lot cheaper and much
just
healthier
walk
for you.
Just walk away from your TV when there's commercials.
Yeah, that's going to be a very good thing for you, especially if you believe a lot of commercials.
Yeah.
Because you got to remember, they're commercials because they're trying to sell you something.
One thing I've always done is when somebody pitches something to me and says, oh, I have this great business idea, and all you got to do is put your money in this bank without whatever, I find out what the business name is. I search it on Google with the word scam attached to it. And that's all I have to do. And that doesn't mean that it tells me whether or not it's a scam, but it tells me everything. It says, I'll get the opinions from people who say it's not a scam. I'll get the opinions from people who say that it is a scam. But at least I'm a well-educated person before I just jump in there and buy into something. But yeah, somebody tells me, you have to try this new kind of face cream or sell this new kind of cutting board or whatever. You know, I just go in there and I type in the name of the product with the word scam, and you can always find something. And that doesn't mean that, I mean, some people claim everything's a scam,
right?
But
you got to,
but it'll
search.
Be obvious if you do that search, you'll probably find it.
I agree. All right. 241-8801. We have another caller. Welcome to the show with Rick and Adam. How can we help you?
I downloaded a PowerPoint presentation to my computer from the internet, and I usually have it go into a download folder, but for some reason it wasn't pointing to there. It's on the computer someplace. What do I need to put in the search to try to locate that PowerPoint?
Is it a PowerPoint program that you, or a show that's already pre-made, or one that you can edit?
No, it's a presentation that somebody put together, so okay. It's already complete.
All right, so more than likely it ends with the extension called PPS, Paul Samuel. And so what you'll want to do is go to Start. What version of Windows are you running?
XP.
Okay, so go to Start and then Search.
Okay, right.
And then you're going to click All Files and Folders.
Got it.
And in the name box, you're going to type an asterisk, which is Shift-8.
Got it, yep.
Then a period, mm-hmm. And then the PPS, Paul
Got
Samuel.
It.
And then one last thing, towards the bottom of the screen, you're going to see an option that says More Options, and make sure that it's searching hidden files and folders.
Oh, my, okay.
Just in case it's somewhere that is not an obvious place.
Got it, okay.
And that should locate it. And then once you locate it, you can drag it to whatever folder you like.
Right, yeah, I know how to do that. Okay, hey, thanks a lot, guys.
You're welcome. Have a good day. 241-8801, extension 1, good questions.
Yeah.
Kind of things we're looking for. We have another half hour, so you have plenty of time to call in. Or if you're a Consumer Report supporter and you think Consumer Reports is still as relevant today as it was in the 70s, then give us a call. We'll be glad to debate that with you.
We met a Consumer Reports reporter at CES one year. Remember that?
I forgot
about
that.
We sat next to him?
Yes, we did.
Yeah. And
I think he was one of their first employees.
Yeah, it could be. I know that he was one of their main guys. In fact, that he got sent to CES tells you he's one of the top guys, because most places only send their top guys to CES.
That's right.
But yeah, I feel the same way you do. If you can go to Amazon.com and read the reviews from actual people who bought the product and used it in real-world situations.
E-pinions.
That has so much, carries so much more weight to it than reading what one guy did.
In a lab.
Even if they say it's not a lab, you know, they try to put it through real world situations, but they're
still
not.
A controlled situation.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I'm the same way. I don't really care much for
too many other places.
And the other thing too is
reviews.
The products that they choose to review. A lot of times they leave out the one I'm considering.
Right. It's never very complete.
No. There's always stuff missing out of there. So
they do buy their own products. We do know that.
Yeah,
they're not allowed to get products for free.
Yep. Yeah, so anyway.
241-8801, extension 1.
Hello, you're on with Rick and Adam. What can we do for you?
Hi there. Over the years, I've had to... This is a computer question.
Okay, good.
Over the years, I've had to buy, you know, another computer because of various different reasons. Sometimes, you know, the motherboard crashes or something like that. But...
They don't last forever.
No.
Yeah.
And every time I've changed computers, and I would guess maybe five in my history, the people who have helped me move things into this new location have created these files and places within the new system.
Mm-hmm.
So that...
With your old data.
Yeah, with my old data. Mm-hmm. So I've got...
Yeah.
You know, what would I call them? You know, like little
cul-de-sacs
of information and photographs and things like that in various different places on my computer. When I go to, you know, like if I'm emailing, for instance, an attachment and I'm trying to find a document or a photo, there's no telling.
Yeah.
I mean, I...
Well, what your job is after you get these new computers is to consolidate. Yes. Go back into those archives and find out things that you really want to keep and just drag them into the folder on the new computer that, like, for example, pictures. You can go in into your pictures folder in one of those archive folders, mm-hmm. pull them up and find out, okay, I do want these, and then drag them into the pictures folder on the current computer so they are consolidated. Because you're right, that can be a very fragmented process to have those in so many different places.
The other question I have for you is that for some reason, when I'm writing an email, and it only happens when it's emailing, it's not when I'm creating a document, but my cursor will move to another place in the email. You know, like it could jump up to the address, and all of a sudden that X that I wanted down there in the content, in the body, is up at the address, and it's putting an X up there. I have to delete that and move my cursor back down. It just, without my control, it does this.
And you,
is this a cordless mouse?
It's my laptop.
See, oh, it's your laptop. That's what I'm wondering, is why it only happens on email. I would guess that it happens on, you're using the touchpad on your computer, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, the most common thing I see cause that problem is people bumping the touchpad while they're typing.
Yeah, no, that's not...
That's not the case at all.
No.
Okay, there's another setting, and I don't know why it would only happen in documents, but there is a setting in your mouse settings sometimes that will, when you go into the control panel, that's usually just a checkbox. Well, there's
a sensitivity. Well, it happens, it doesn't actually happen when I'm writing in documents.
Right. See, what I'm wondering is there's a little checkbox in the mouse settings in the control panel sometimes that will tell it to automatically jump to the form area.
Oh, the snap
so
that,
like the snap to, oh. Yeah. So what it does is makes it so if you load a page, it automatically, like Google comes up, it automatically jumps so that your cursor is into the box where the Google search, or you go into an email and it automatically jumps to the to box, and you know, so that you don't move the mouse up. But I don't know why it would only be happening in email. That's
well, I'll check
weird.
That out. I'll definitely. But yeah. It feels like it's a virus, like something is in the system controlling the...
Do you have good antivirus
on your computer? Yeah, I think so. I have two, and somebody said I shouldn't have two.
Which two do you have?
I have the free one.
Which one?
Well, it's...
There's many free ones.
Oh, there is.
And some are dangerous free ones, and some of them are perfectly
legitimate,
safe.
Yeah.
Well, the one that isn't free... Oh, no, that's a malware. I don't know. Yeah, I'd have to look into my computer.
Yeah, we'd need to know that, because that is a pretty big... Because if you're have that instinct that you might have a virus or something, sometimes you're right. So.
I have AVG.
Okay, that's okay.
Okay, AVG, and then let me just look on my...
Do you know which version of AVG you're using?
The free version.
No, there's, again, there's 8.5, 9.0, 2011...
I will look.
Okay. These are all kind of questions that not only you, but everyone listening should know. They should all know these kinds of pieces of information, because not only when you need help are you going to get asked that, but it also behooves you as the computer's owner. And again, I'm not using you being our caller here, but you as computer users in general, it behooves you to be up to snuff on what's on your computer, how current it is, whether it's still a recommended product, those kinds of things.
Well, you know, when I go on to whatever it is that I can go on to, which isn't very much, it says just AVG antivirus free, and then it encourages me to upgrade to this Security 2011.
Okay.
Yeah, it's hard to say. That's still not enough information for us.
Okay.
But
thank you.
I would say if you have any kind of doubts about whether your computer is running the way it should be, get some help.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah. I'm going to try that.
All right. Good
Thank
luck.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
All right. 241-8801.
And we're trying to answer somebody. There you are. Hi. Welcome to the public. Well, no. Are you there?
No.
Try it again. Okay. Now are we answered? Hello. Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, good. Well, you're on with Public Affairs with Rick and Adam. What can we do for you?
I routinely use two cleaners. Sea Cleaner, and I don't know if you're familiar with Glary.
I've heard of Glary Utilities,
Okay, and I'm not sure, but every now and then, I think it may be Sea Cleaner. When I do that, there'll be an entry when it does the cleaning of something called prefetch data.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And
both of them will do that.
I say, okay, go ahead and clean it. And one time I clicked on that, and boy, there's a sizable number of things in that topic.
There can
what
be.
What is prefetch, and should I be cleaning it?
You should be cleaning it. And what prefetch is for, and again, it's kind of like the temporary files on the internet. It's actually a feature that Windows has had that's been there for a while to help speed the functioning of Windows. And so programmers have the option of creating a little file or instructions for their program to be able to have Windows have at the ready some of the programming necessary for that individual application so that you can pull it up a hair faster. The old long and short of it is that prefetch, if you have a pretty current computer and it's running clean, doesn't speed things up to any noticeable effect. So by cleaning that out from time to time, it actually keeps your computer running a little bit smoother and better.
Okay, okay. So it's better just to get rid of it and...
I always do.
Again?
Oh, yeah, it'll come back. It's just like temporary files. Using your computer, it'll always come back and build up again over time. And you just got to keep cleaning it out.
Okay.
Kind of like when I dust my end tables, they continue to get dusty. I got to keep dusting them.
Right. And I notice both of those give you an option of installing a toolbar, which I never do. But is it your understanding that those are more headaches than they're worth?
Yeah, I do not like extra toolbars. I agree.
Okay. Okay. So
forego the toolbars.
Right. So don't acknowledge that. Just leave that one alone.
Yep, I would.
Okay. Okay. Hey, thanks a lot.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for calling.
All right.
241-8801 extension 1. If you're calling in when there's a caller on the air, keep in mind that we can't put you on hold, so just wait till you hear them click off and you can call right back and we'll get you right back on. But
so
we can only take one at a time.
Yeah, if you were trying to call in during that last call, we didn't answer because we could not. So now we can. So now you can call. There you are.
241-8801.
You know, I'm seeing something go around in the email. Well, let's go ahead and answer this call first. Hello,
sure.
You're on
calls
the
always
Adam.
Take priority.
What can we do for you?
Hi, I was thinking about buying a digital camera. And,
ooh, good.
I saw when you mentioned Consumer Report, they had kind of recommended the Canon EOS Rebel T2i.
Yeah.
18 megapixels.
Yeah, are you looking for a digital SLR? Does it have to have lenses that come off and all that stuff?
Well.
Or does it matter?
I was kind of thinking that. That would be the better picture, right?
Not necessarily. Well,
on what you want to do.
Yeah, better picture. You're right. Yeah, it probably will be a better picture, but the problem is
if you know how to use it.
The other thing, too, is you're going to get to the point where if you start compare a Lamborghini to a Honda Civic and the speed limit is 65 miles an hour, it doesn't matter how fast that Lamborghini will go. If all you need is the 65 mile an hour speed limit, does that make sense?
Yeah,
the T2i is a fantastic camera. It produces beautiful images. It has a lot of different features, but whether or not it's overkill is really the question. I would give it a 10 out of 10. It's a great camera, but I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to anybody who's looking for a digital camera because all too often, if you're say for example, if you do a lot of traveling, and if you buy it for the interchangeable lenses. You know, if you're traveling and you don't want to have to mess with all those lenses, it's a heavy camera. It's, anytime you take the lenses off, you risk getting dust in the camera. So if you're traveling a lot or in strange situations,
you might
not want to do that.
Did you use a film camera with removable lenses before?
I had an SLR with a wide angle lens, and mm-hmm. pretty much I'd always use that wide angle lens.
What sure. brand?
It's Pentax.
Pentax. Okay.
Pentax now is Samsung.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, and they still make good cameras. There's a lot of them out there. But, I'm not trying to discourage you from that T2i, but I think that that's a higher-end model, and you may not even need that. I would take a look also at the Canon S, I think it's called the SX30IS.
X.
Yeah, S as in Sam, X.
X-ray.
I. S as in Sam.
Igloo.
SXI 30?
Yeah, the SX30IS.
IS. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, image stability.
Image stabilization, yeah. And what that is that's not a, you can't take the lenses off, but it is a, like a 25X or something. I forget what the zoom power is on it, but it's a 20X zoom at least, which is a similar to a 480, 420 millimeter zoom lens. So it's got a nice lens on it. It's all in one. It's a lot lighter. And it does all the same things.
Oh,
far
really?
As HD video and things like that. Yeah.
The other question, thank you for telling me about that.
Sure.
The other question I had is I was looking on some websites and one of them said that if you did buy this Rebel T2i, that you had to have your computer had to have a 1 gig at least, I think.
No, not necessarily. RAM. Not necessarily, because you're not, if you're really getting into this, you're not even going to use the software that comes with the camera. You're probably just going to use like Picasa or something like that.
Or even just Windows.
Or Windows and use a card reader and just transfer the pictures directly from your camera.
Right.
You won't need to load their software. They probably do come with software that recommends a gig of RAM, but that's probably not that critical.
Oh, okay, because I've got 518, I think it is.
Yeah, you're
512.
Or 512.
Yep. Yeah. You're probably fine. And there's a lot of cameras out there. I would really check them out and just say anything that's over that 10 megapixels is going to have a good picture. Stick with a brand name. So a Canon, Nikon, like I said, Samsung or Pentax. Sony is now Minolta. So, or Minolta was bought by Sony. So anything that Sony has, you know, the Minolta technology into it.
Oh.
So when you start looking at cameras out there, stick with a brand name and pick the one that has the features that you'd really like, but your image quality is probably going to be acceptable with anything you go with, because once we get to 10 megapixels, we're already surpassing the quality of film. The grain is smaller, the sharpness is better, and even the color is better.
Oh, that's interesting. You just said that because some other websites, guys said, well, okay, I'm taking the picture with this, I'm going to make it up, 18 megapixel.
Sure.
And then here I'm using a Fuji Velvita film.
Yeah, Velvia. Mm-hmm.
And one of them
Velvia.
Said, boy, look at the film is better. Then in another website with the same kind of experiment said, no, the digital is
better.
Well,
usually when you're, in order to compare them, you have to have exactly the same optics, you have to have the same situation, the same lighting, the same...
same photographer.
ISO, yeah, even the same photographer, if you really wanted to do it. And that's the thing, is people can't decide. There's some people who say, wait a minute, the film is better because it has this richness and contrast. But other people will look at it and be able to see the faces and the people way in the background and see better detail in the digital image, and they'll argue that the digital is better. So, but overall, when you print that picture out as a 4x5 or an 8x10, you're not going to even see a difference.
Oh, okay. Very interesting. I thank you for that information.
Sure. You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. All right.
Yeah, I think that the big thing that people think they're going to, like you mentioned, you're going to buy a lot of computer. In fact, I was working with a woman this morning who bought a Sony frame, a digital frame, because it'll do music in the background.
Uh-huh.
It'll allow you to choose folders if you create folders on your data file.
Right.
But she says she's not going to use any of that.
Yeah. No, I know. I know. Hello, you're back, or you're on the air with Rick and Adam answering computer questions. What can we do for you?
Yes, I have some computer questions.
Okay.
I heard you say that, you might be able to suggest a way to get some kind of an evaluation. I have several computers, one of which is a Dell Dimension. It's a 4550. And this was actually a hand-me-down, and I'm trying to determine if I'm beating a dead horse. I've already done some work on it.
Rather than give us the model numbers, about how old do you think that computer is?
I would estimate it's probably 7 years old.
Okay, you're beating a dead horse.
anything.
Now,
over,
I don't know what you're trying to do.
What,
I shouldn't jump to conclusions, but
what do you want to do with it?
Well, I'd like to use it, but
For what? Use it for what, though? Play solitaire? Be on the internet?
No. Actually,
play
anything
music.
That I may have a need for, if it's even working offline or something of that nature, but we typically use them most for emails, any type of research that we may want to do.
Do you know how much RAM is on that old computer?
How much RAM?
Mm-hmm.
It has, I actually added some recently, and that's why I'm wondering about this. And it, so it's 512.
512. I would say for a computer that aged that you want to maybe get up and running and use it mainly for internet and email, learn how to use Linux and use a copy of Ubuntu Linux or what's called Linux Mint. And those are two freely available programs you can download from the internet. And they completely erase Windows from the computer, and you don't have to mess around with Windows updates and security and all that kind of stuff. It's a very secure operating system, very easy to use, and also works extremely well on older hardware. So that would be a really good way to repurpose one of those kinds of machines.
Okay. If I were looking at this differently, because I have two others, one of which has had very little use, but has, and it's an XP operating system, they all are. It had, somehow we didn't have security and we got a Trojan virus or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it needs some cleanup, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds as though I might want to consider wiping out most of what it has on any of those and start over.
That's always the best way to go, especially if you're not sure what they need and what needs to happen. That's always the best way to make sure you're starting with a clean slate.
Okay. Now, so you mentioned the Linux operating system, 1.2 and or Mint.
Yeah, the Ubuntu Linux, U-B-U-N-T-U, or the what's called Linux Mint. If you just go to linuxmint.com, you'll find that. It's just a more customized version of Ubuntu, but they're very, very good operating systems. And for folks that just want to maybe play a little bit of solitaire, do some word processing, cruise the internet and do email, there'll be more and more than ample machines for you.
Okay. And as far as getting educated to where I can do more on the computer, what would you suggest there?
Well, locally, there is a group that meets once a month on the second Wednesday of every month from 10:30 to 12:30 in the morning, of course, 10:30 to 12:30 in the morning on the second Wednesday of the month. And you can find out more information at helpmerick.com. Click on the users group, Grand Junction Computer Users Group.
Okay.
Okay.
Got it. Very good. Thank you.
All right. Have a good day. Thanks for the call. 241-8801 extension 1. We have a few minutes left. If you want to try to squeeze in one more call, we can do that. Now, you were starting to come up with something there a second ago.
Oh, I was going to say that, you know, throughout Facebook and the emails and everything, you know how you get these warnings and, well, you know what? I'm going to not talk about that, and I'm going to answer a phone call.
Okay, sounds good.
Hi, you're on with Rick and Adam. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I have a question. Can you enslave a hard drive from a laptop using an adapter with a USB port?
Okay, so do you want to connect a large hard drive to a laptop through the USB port, is that right?
No, it's a hard drive from a laptop to another laptop.
Oh, sure.
But using an adapter that has a USB on one end,
mm-hmm.
and then the
the proper
regular serial.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you can.
You can, and you can order special cables that have that off eBay for like $10, or
okay.
You can go to Best Buy, and they have things called hard drive enclosures. And make sure that you get one that works with both 2.5-inch hard drives and 3.5-inch hard drives. That's laptop and desktop sized.
And have you had any experience using the booting disk from KNOP? PPIX.
Yeah. Nopix.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
You have.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
It's a form of Linux.
It's a good recovery disk, isn't it?
It is. It's another form of Linux that you can boot up from with a CD, and then you can use it to look at maybe a dead computer or a computer that has a virus or something like that safely.
Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you.
Wow, interesting.
I guess we answered that, right?
I guess so.
241-8801 extension.
Very,
okay.
That's interesting. Very
precise, to the point.
Very precise and to the point. Yeah, interesting question there. But yes, you can. You can hook up an external hard drive. Just to tell people, you can take a regular hard drive and connect it up to your computer.
You're not enslaving it.
Not via a slave. But, well, the wording mm-hmm. is there. He knows enough to get almost the right words there.
Except enslave.
Enslave is different. You don't want to enslave your hard drive. But
that was just an issue.
Anyway.
All right, so Facebook and email warnings.
Yeah, anyway, these things keep going on about Spokio. I don't know if you've
seen
that.
Oh, that's the one about your phone number.
It's been around way over a year and all
that.
Your
name's in there.
For some reason, it's going back through again. Spokio.com. Yes, it's real. Yes, it gives you information. But take a look at the information it gives you, what it is. You put in your name or your neighbor's name or whatever, and it will tell you things like what income bracket they fall into and how much their house was appraised for and what their phone number is. And
sometimes gives all that.
It shows you a Google. Yeah, exactly. If you're not listed in the phone book, most of that information isn't there. Or if you're, you know, there's a bunch of stuff missing. But people just get all spooked because it looks like, you know, it tells you all this information about yourself, but most of it, if you look in the forums, is standard. It's just like tells you this person makes between $50,000 and $1 million,
right,
or, you know, something like that. It's very general information for the most part. Yes, it tells you the phone number, but look up.
Have a picture of your house.
It might have a picture of your house. You know, that's because your address, type in any address into Google Maps and it'll see a picture of your house. Don't get all spooked about it. The information is all public information.
You don't have to go out and unlist yourself from Spokio.
Please don't.
The only people that ever look at Spokio are people that get these warnings.
Exactly. There's really no use to do it. Or if you see a house that's for sale and you're trying to move to a certain city,
right?
Heck, why not? But you might as well type it into Google Maps. It would be the same thing. So it's not
Realtor.com.
Yeah. You know, it's just, it's something that's fascinating because of technology, but it's not anything to be afraid of. It's nobody's misusing the information.
You would never miss another thing in your life if you never opened a message that said forward.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my opinion.
Exactly.
If you read all those.
And then you know what? And then there are things that people should be spooked about that they're not.
I know.
People
I know.
Go onto Facebook and they type, we're going to be leaving to Hawaii for the 3 weeks and we're going to be gone and we hope the dog's okay because we're only having somebody check in on the house once a day and in the evenings.
And their security settings are set that everyone can read this.
That's right. Oh, geez. And that's the stuff that gets me. In fact, there's websites I know that track Twitter and Facebook, track people who aren't home.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah.
Oh,
and so
and that's the same
the
thing
stuff
with
you
the,
should be scared of.
With don't, the check-in. Do you like the check-in deal?
Check-in.
Like the Facebook check-in?
I don't do
check
Facebook
in.
Check-in. I do use
Foursquare.
Foursquare check-in once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't. When we go on vacation as a family, there's always at least one of us that's never in the pictures, that never, you know, I mean, we try to be careful to say our family's gone to such and such. You know, I still, if I'm in, you know, if I'm in Las Vegas for CES, I have no problem checking in and saying I'm here or saying I'm at McDonald's because there's five other people in my family that could be at home at any time. But I never post stuff like our family's going to be gone for the next 3 weeks and stuff like that.
There's better things to worry about than about Spokio.
Yeah.
Spokio is the least of your problems.
Exactly.
And while we're talking about that, since we've got to wrap it up
here
in a second.
Yeah.
The other thing people will say, you talked about typing in scam into Google earlier.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of folks will come on and they'll get these forwarded messages and there'll always be something at the bottom that says, we've already checked this in
Snopes. Yeah.
And usually that's another way for you to try to get you not to check it.
Right.
So it probably has not been checked. It behooves you to check it.
Or they tell you, this information came straight from the government. It's House Bill such and such. Don't bother to look it up because we already did.
Send in this postcard and Bill Gates will send you $500.
Yeah, just don't do it. Come on. I mean, Snopes is a great resource, although they tend to be a little wrong on their political, they're
sometimes
not politically neutral necessarily, but but at least they check their facts, and so that's interesting.
They tried it. All right, we'll wrap it up for this week. We'll be back again next month on the second Wednesday evening from 5:30 to 6:30. on the public affairs meeting, second Wednesday, and then next month, of course, on the third Wednesday, noon to one as well.
And weekly podcasts on helpmerick.com.
And talkingdigital.org. So thanks very much for listening, and have a great week.